the website that gives you some real excitement without charging you by the minute.
It really is a lot of fun.
TalkZone.com. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to my show and the discussion with Susan McCarthy, author of Becoming a Tiger, How Baby Animals Learn to Live in the Wild. If you would like to see some great photos that we're going to be talking about as we go further with our conversation, click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone homepage for my show. Our phone lines are also open, and so you can call 888-463-6748 if you'd like to ask a question or join a conversation. We're talking about what happens if a baby animal imprints or thinks an animal that is not its own kind is its mother. And one of my questions for you, Susan, would, I guess, be about some of the primates. I have a photograph of a 4-week-old orangutan, and the story wasn't exactly clear, but obviously this mother could not take care of the baby, and it was taken away when it was very young. And so it's being, you know, reared and fed by humans. Do we know if there's times that animals have imprinted so much on humans that they don't even know they are a non-human?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm. There was a fellow in England some years ago who raised a baby orangutan from just, you know, very young because he wanted to teach it sign language, which in this case was not as successful as some other people have been. But at one point when it was a year or so old, he took his little baby, who happened to be an orangutan, to the zoo, and it saw another orangutan for the first time since it had been born, and it was terrified and grabbed him very tightly and was completely frightened. And the sad part was the orangutan that it was terrified by was its own mother.
Oh, sure. Well, there's that imprinting in action. There's many animals who have fostered, and I have pictures of a dachshund by the name of Tink and a little pig that they named Pink. And this was by a woman by the name of Joanna Kirby, and she does have a blog, and you can look her up and read much more about the story. But here it shows this cute little pink pig along with all these dachshund puppies. And then there's another remarkable story of a chimpanzee who was helping tiger cubs. And again, you can go to, there's many, many ways to look this up, and one of the YouTubes that I have on my homepage is of Anjana, the chimpanzee, with the tiger cub. It's remarkable. Now, in this case, I'm sure these cubs did not really imprint on the chimpanzee. Do you know about the story at all, Susan?
Well, typically, if you have more than one tiger cub together, they won't imprint, because being raised, growing up with another tiger cub, they know that they're a tiger. If you have just one tiger cub being raised by another species, and typically what a zoo will do if they have an orphan tiger cub is they'll have it raised by a large dog. And if there are a couple of cubs, there's no problem. But if you have just one cub and it's being raised by the dog will do a great job, and the tiger may grow up thinking it's a dog.
Oh, dear. Yes, and in this case with Anjana, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, you know, this chimp was simply taking, you know, part in the caregiving. And, yes, there were a couple cubs. Now, one of, another favorite story, and, you know, your book is just filled with them. It's one great story after another, very nicely and well-organized, Susan, by your chapters and headings. So, you know, I just love the structure of the book. But I really like this picture of Lady, a golden eagle, and a goose baby that, you know, a little gosling that she was raising. So tell us the story of this golden eagle and her gosling baby.
This eagle, her name was Lady, and she was taken from the nest by Ed and Kent Durden. This was done legally some years ago. And she was a, you know, very well-adjusted, happy eagle, but she kept laying eggs, and she would sit on the eggs for weeks and weeks. And, of course, the eggs would never hatch because she hadn't met any other eagles. They weren't fertile eggs. And they felt sorry for her, and they thought she should, you know, have a chance. So they there was a flock of geese nearby, and they took a goose egg, and they gave it to her to sit on. And she was perfectly happy sitting on a goose egg. And as the little gosling developed inside the egg, it started peeping. And she peeped back because an eagle and a goose just both do this. And so the mother eagle and the baby gosling were peeping to each other. And then it fought its way out of the egg, and she was very concerned. And she picked away the little bits of broken eggshell the way an eagle mother does or a mm-hmm. goose mother does. And so there she was, happy with her baby. Now, if she had had a baby eagle, it would have been helpless for weeks. But goslings, you know, they dry off. An hour later, they're up and running around. And so Lady was a little surprised at, you know, her very precocious child. Up, jumping around, running, peeping. And so, but okay, so my baby's very smart. And she decided to feed it. And she was eating horse meat, and she tore off a tiny piece of meat and offered it to the gosling. But there was a problem, because an eagle takes food from its mother's beak, but a goose picks food off the ground or off the water. So this baby gosling, for all day, was just running around, looking on the ground, looking on the ground, looking on the ground, and she was running after it, holding meat in her beak and going, chirp, 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 look what I have, look what I have. And the gosling is running around, staring at the ground, going, I'm hungry, hungry!
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the people held the gosling up to her beak, but the gosling didn't pay attention, because the idea of taking food from your mother's beak is just not something a gosling knows how to do. And they were getting pretty worried, but on the second day, all of a sudden, the gosling, something clicked. The gosling looked up at Lady, its mother, and took the meat from its beak, from her beak, and, oh, and ate it. Oh, delicious. And so Lady gave it another piece of meat and so forth. It turns out that, you know, the goose was pretty happy eating meat. But they weren't sure that was a good idea for a gosling to live on an all-meat diet, so they put in a bowl of bread and milk. And, of course, the eagle tasted it, and she thought, bread and milk, why bother? But the gosling was like, this is delicious. So the next time that they put a bowl of bread and milk in the cage, she grabbed it in her beak and carried it down and slapped it down in front of the gosling. This is your good bread and milk. You'll eat this.
Oh, and that just brings the picture to mind of our own, you know, mothers doing that. And again, the intelligence there and the responsibility. Here, you know, here's your dish. I just love that. And I also thought it was so funny at one point when you were saying earlier when, you know, the little gosling was not taking the meat, that Lady was worrying herself into such a state that the gentleman at Durden had to calm her down. It's like, poor thing.
Yes.
Well, all right. Let's move a little bit into getting the point across, how animals communicate. And again, this is something we are very familiar with. You know, we are trained and we learn how to communicate and talk. But the animals also need to learn, you know, how to communicate properly, live in the world. And the black little vervet monkeys have all sorts of calls they have to learn to imitate and copy. And I also, when I was in Africa, you know, I saw the black vervets, which I thought were adorable. But anyway, so tell us a little bit about what it's like for the little vervet to have to learn, you know, how to make the proper calls.
Well, that's very interesting, because they are born knowing what an alarm call is. But a very young monkey, whatever the alarm call is, what it should do is just hold on tight to its mother. And they've got separate alarm calls for something scary on the ground and something scary in the air. So, for example, if you hear the call that says something scary on the ground, you should rush up a tree. And if you hear the call for something scary in the air, you should hide under a bush, because it might be an eagle coming to grab you. But the babies, they both know it means something scary, but they don't know precisely what. And they have to learn, you know, to say, to give the alarm call when they see an eagle, but not if they see a pigeon.
Mm.
Or in one case, a baby monkey gave the alarm call when it saw a big leaf fall off a tree.
Oh, dear.
And grown-ups didn't think much of that.
No, but it's clear that, you know, and understandable that, you know, the baby's just learning and may say the wrong thing, you know.
Yep.
And that's very familiar to us also. Well, let's talk about a little bit of making a living, meaning, you know, animals need to know what to eat and how to
hunt.
Very
important.
Yes, this is a big topic, obviously, and one that is probably obvious to most people. And what I'm interested in a little bit is the idea of this idea that we think all animals instinctually know this. For example, anyone who have pet cats, you know, everyone I know that, you know, had a cat, they never showed them how to hunt. And often, you know, they were taken away from their mothers, being indoor cats, never learned necessarily to hunt. But then, you know, their cat becomes kind of an outdoor cat, and they seem not to have any problem with stalking and killing, you know, the harmless little birds or other small creatures. So with domestic cats, is it one of these instinctual or closed programs, Susan?
Well, it's yes and no, because, okay, you know, the cat, everybody knows, even if your cat has never been outside, it has all these hunting moves. It will hunt a ball of paper. It will sneak up on the ball of paper. It will grab the ball of paper. It will torture the ball of paper. And so they have all these instinctive moves. But actually, putting that in practice enough to make a living, there is learning involved in that. And we see that our cats, if we let them outdoors, that they will catch mice and birds. But we don't know whether they could catch enough to make a living if we weren't also feeding them cat food. And you'll notice that they're not all the same. For example, my friend Lori had two cats, and one was an excellent hunter of birds, sad to say, and the other one couldn't do anything except catch hummingbirds. And how it caught a hummingbird, which is very fast, nobody could ever figure out. Nobody saw what it did. But periodically, it would show up with a hummingbird, the only thing it knew how to catch. You'll find other cats that specialize in mice.
Yes. I was in Kenya on the Maasai Mara, and I was afforded the great opportunity of actually coming upon, when I was in this Land Rover with a couple other people, two juvenile cheetahs, probably hunting for the first time. And the person that was with us, the driver and our guide, figured that this was probably the first time these two cheetahs had hunted. And he explained to us that cheetahs need to be taught basically from its mother how to do this. And the reason why we knew this was a new experience is these two cheetahs saw a gazelle, and we've got a picture of a Thompson gazelle. It's number 31 here on the website. And so they chased after the gazelle. One of them sat on it, and then they one sat on it, and the other just kind of hung out, and they just hung out. And then eventually the gazelle, you know, would loosen away and get up and run. And then the two cheetahs would follow them, just knock them down and sit on them again. And they didn't know what to do. Well, this went on quite a while, Susan, until finally one of them was kind of mouthing it and maybe something kicked in. Oh, yeah, Mom showed us and brought us some animal. And, oh, that's right, we had to do something with this neck. And finally they were able to, you know, kill the gazelle. But it took a really long time to do this. And so these poor little, you know, they just didn't know what to do. Well, we are out of time right now. I do have the link to how to order the book, Becoming a Tiger, on my website, and also how to get to Susan McCarthy's blog. Some of the pictures we haven't gotten to, you know, if you read the book, you'll see more, you'll read more of the stories. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Susan.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. If any of you have any stories or pictures about animals that have adopted other pets or other animals that you know of, please write me and share your story. My website is wildaboutpets.net. Remember, net rhymes with pet. That's wildaboutpets.net. Thank you for listening.